Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
No. Hi, I'm Natalie Campbell. You're listening to DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. As I said, I am a guest today, Natalie Campbell. I'm an independent curator working as a consultant on art and exhibitions with the DC Public Library. And I'm here with Victor.
Hi, everyone. My name is Victor Benitez. I'm a librarian at the DC Public Library, and I'm currently serving as the interim manager of the labs.
And today we are talking about artists and within the library. So this is going to be an informal chat about what artists can do in libraries and what libraries can do with artists. And a little bit about what our calling slash profession teaches us about caring for the city we live in. And for the show today, I've brought together a socially minded artist, a public librarian, that's Victor, which, as we'll discuss, is perhaps socially minded by definition. And on the phone, we've got Don Russell, the director of a social justice art library, who's also the curator of art galleries at George Mason University, and another person who's thought a lot about this question. So artists using research, artists as agents of social change, artists in the public sphere. So with that, my first guest is Nando Alvarez, who is an artist and a member of the local collective, The Sanctuaries. And I'm going, and then after I speak to Nando, we will speak with Don Russell, the curator of George Mason University Galleries and the director of Provisions Library for Art and Social Change. So I also want to preface this conversation a little bit. In my work, moving around the library system, I get this amazing peek into what library staff and artists are doing, but it seems like there's never time to get these people together in the same room. So thank you to Victor and to the labs for letting us take a show to talk about some things together. And none of the people in this conversation know each other.
That's right.
that's part of the point, is just to kind of start to mix it up a little bit. So I thought we'd just start by hearing from everyone in the room about what your practice is, what you do, your background. And I wanted to start with Nando. I got to know Nando through the curator slash artist, Joseph Orizal, also known as Nomu Nomu, who invited Nando to participate in a collaborative poster project that we created in the library for the 50th anniversary of 1968. Nando, can you tell us a bit about your background, how you come to DC, and the type of work you do?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys, for having me. This is a great opportunity to have these conversations. My name is Nando Alvarez. I'm from Ecuador. I came to the U.S. about like around 6-7 years ago, maybe. I've been living in D.C. for around 4 years and a half. I'm horrible with time measurement. So I'm a visual artist. I'm part of the collective The Sanctuaries. So a little bit of my background. So I receive a formal education for the advertisement industry, which I have to work a little bit in my previous career. It's a path that I have to end and like look for new pursuits that fit more with what I was trying to do and what I was trying to communicate. I'm a photographer. I've done like some freelance career in the past with photography. I currently do a lot of screen printing, digital illustration, painting. So I try to mix all these forms of art and put together a new sense of what everything means for me and try to understand social issues that are part of my community back in Ecuador and my new community here in D.C. where I live in right now.
So can you give examples of how the work that you've created has been a part of direct action or a part of yeah, what other kind, what, you know, what this work has been used for?
Absolutely. So at the beginning, when I was trying to shift careers, I was trying to understand the social issues. So I thought that the best way to do that was just connecting directly with people on the ground who is doing the work, has been doing the work for years. So I just plugging into different organizations that I heard of in DC, for example, Street Sense. So I just contact them and say, hey, I have this background, I would like to do some work for you, like pro bono work or whatever you need for, and they contact me later, and we did a couple of things. They were doing a campaign for first for the launching of the new image of Street Sense. They were launching the new app, so I had the chance to do photography for them for a campaign, some graphic material. So that's kind of a way that I got into these institutions or organizations that are doing that kind of work. Through the sanctuaries, I got the opportunity to know more of these organizations of grassroots movements are like working, for example, for affordable housing here in DC, or against gentrification, or against displacement in the city, or organizations that are trying to create awareness to speak out about the Muslim ban. So I have done work with those kind of organizations, for example, Empower DC and IB City Neighborhood. We had a beautiful campaign there, a work that involved several parts. And one of those was the sanctuaries. And so we got to create these cool signs, yard signs that we put on the signs, like Ivy City East, and it was a blank space, so people will fill it out with whatever Ivy City means for them. Mm-hmm. So we just give away those signs around the neighborhood, and we took pictures, and we got people excited about involving and participating in this organized, like kind of event to speak out about like the hard gentrification that this neighborhood is getting into. So we create this really nice huge 3D letters with pictures from the residents, pictures from archives from the 50s, from the 40s. The Cromella School, who has been abandoned for like 30 or 40 years. So we got all these memories from the neighborhood, and we put it out mixed with actual images of the neighborhoods of this cool Ivy City neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then we make a big event with everybody. We're so excited to see them in this collective piece that was an identity of what this neighborhood means.
Mm-hmm. And that you showed images of that piece when you were recently doing workshops with residents at the DC Public Library, and it's a really beautiful piece. It's, again, it's really large lettering that says Ivy City Is, and you used archival research, and you included lots of imagery and voices of community members to create that piece. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand, like all the different types of skills and disciplines that artists draw on, and all the different hats you wear to realize a project like that. You work as a community organizer, you work as a photographer and a graphic artist, you work as a researcher, and you sort of bring it all together. So I think when we are doing workshops with artists like you in the library, one thing I'm interested in is just educating people about all the different ways in which artists are working, but also that artists are working really directly with communities, and that they themselves are part of these communities and are participating and reflecting. You live in Ivy City yourself, right?
Yeah, I live like 5 minutes away from Ivy City. I live in Trinidad, which is another neighborhood in Northeast, mm-hmm. but we used to have a studio there in Ivy City. We ourselves, with other artists from the centers, we got displaced from the neighborhood just months ago.
That was going to be my next question, is can you speak a little bit more about, I mean, talking about being artists being implicated in situations that affect everyone, what are the sanctuaries? How big is the group? What type of work does the sanctuaries do?
Sure. So the sanctuaries is a community of artists. We are over 150 artists, I think. It's a very big community. So one of the 3 points, principles that we try to work is around to building power, shifting culture, and heal spirits for the wellness of the people. So we are kind of able to do that, trying to bring people together from different and diverse backgrounds, whether it's like religious backgrounds, racial backgrounds, or different artistic disciplines. And we bring these people together and try to organize and advocate for communities, for you know, the necessities of different communities, and try to learn with these communities how to organize better and create change.
And I noticed, you know, for example, you, I mean, this was an interesting part of working on the 50th anniversary of the Poor People's Campaign Artist Projects with you, because at the same time that we were trying to engage residents to create posters inspired by the history of the Poor People's Campaign, the Sanctuaries was hosting art builds for the Poor People's Campaign 2018 and inviting people to come and learn screen printing and make a banner and use the space. And there would be people that had never tried these, you know, tried these printmaking processes before that were coming and getting involved. And I stopped by Open Studios DC to pay an artist. And it was the night before the gun march, and Carolyn had turned over the space, and it was children and family. So just speaking to, I mean, this constant conversation that we're having about the need for artist space in DC, we sometimes see art as siloed from everyday life or siloed from activism. And I listened to Carolyn Hartman from Open Studios, who ran that space for how many years? 20 years? Not that specific space, but she'd had a studio.
She has another studio before, and mm-hmm. she had to move mm-hmm. into this place in IBC, and then she has to move again.
So she's just decided to move to Baltimore. So the space that's the Sanctuaries was using. And so I guess it's just that that point. So that point to show that these places are not just, you know, places for artists making oil paintings of the sky, exactly. but for people that are trying to address issues that are relevant nationally and very locally, and they're true community spaces. And so what's going on with the Sanctuaries now?
Well, we are in a new phase right now. We finally found a new home. Our co-directors did an amazing job, like, looking for places. You know, it can be crazy how expensive now it's to find a place here in the city. But fortunately, we have new partners. It's the Plymouth, I think I'm saying correct, Plymouth Church. Mm-hmm. In Fort Totten area. So we have a space there, and now we are trying to, we're in a fundraising campaign, because we were using Carolyn's studio before, and she was tremendously generous with ourselves. So we got to use all the equipment and the studio space. Now we have the space, but we don't have the equipment to start doing and producing art and the capacity that we were doing before. So we are kind of in this fundraising, trying to have our studio ready, back up and running as soon as possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is there a place, how can people find out more about the campaign, and how can they contribute?
Sure, thank you. So everybody who is interested can go to thesanctuaries.org. You can learn more about what we do in the community and all the events. We also host very dope events with cool art and meaningful conversations. So you can learn about that. And also, if you're interested in supporting our work, you can go to the tab support, and then you will be prompted to a screen where you can just put the amount of money that you feel comfortable collaborating.
I mean, the other side of this, too, is I think it's interesting that you're moving into a church, Plymouth Congregational Church, with a history, like many of the churches in D.C. has a history of supporting activists, and churches themselves are also trying to hold on to their space. We work with other artists who've, the maker in residence, who Victor has been working with really closely. has been working for many years with the Shaw Community Center, which is based in Lincoln Temple Church, which has recently had to close its doors. So again, this idea that artists are really implicated in the history and the ongoing activism of the city, and that librarians actually are also part of following these issues very closely and trying to work alongside artists in different ways. So with that, maybe I'll turn to Victor.
Sure.
Who, Victor, you are the interim director of the labs at DC Public Library. Can you tell us a little bit about what your job is and how you came to it?
Yeah. So Natalie, first, thank you for coordinating today's show. I know I gave you a short notice. And Nando, thank you for being with us. I think a lot of what you said resonates with my work. It's also interesting that you were originally interested in advertisement. I went to undergrad thinking I would go into the advertising field. Started making progress towards that, but then kind of had a full change of heart and didn't know what I would be doing after that. So it took me some time to figure it out. But yeah, Natalie, like I mentioned, I'm a librarian. I guess I chose to become a librarian because after undergrad, the economy was really bad. I was living in Chicago. I didn't exactly know what I would be doing. So I decided to just get involved in my community. I started working at a community center in Chicago in the Puerto Rican neighborhood and started learning about lots of different social issues that, like, before I would learn about but never really experienced firsthand. So like the more I got involved, I learned about like issues of gentrification and affordable housing, things like there was no library in that community center, where there was no place to keep an archive of this community's like kind of political and historical work. So I started organizing with the center. And slowly, while I was in contact with organizers, artists, and librarians, it kind of clicked on me that where my skills were in trying to bring people together and in trying to create spaces that were inclusive. And like, I'm not necessarily an artistic person, but my skills are more in terms of asking critical questions, of asking why things happen. Why are things like this? And trying to empower people to figure out these answers for themselves and providing my own skills in organizing and maybe sometimes thinking down the road how this might look. So I moved to DC about 6 years ago to do some internship. I was interning, thinking maybe I would go more towards digital librarianship, but I kind of missed the work of being in community, so I decided to apply to the DC Public Library. And I got a job there at like I think 5 years ago as a librarian. And I guess what we do every day is a lot. I think I see myself as a public librarian as a resource to whomever comes into the library, but also to anyone that is in the community in that library space. I'm also an advocate for people that use the library. I advocate for what libraries are and always stress that libraries are always changing and reflect the communities around them. So not one library will look the same with another library. They should all be very focused on what that community's identity is. So I balance a lot of things, but I think where I find the most joy is in creating a space where people can really discover who they are, their histories, and kind of find ways to express themselves through either storytelling, through art, or through more conventional ways like writing a book or like finding new skills for jobs, etc. So it's been a month since I've been an interim manager for the labs. The labs have been kind of an evolving space, and I think we're still trying to figure out what the labs are. But the lab started about my involvement with the lab started 4 years ago, where I asked to be transferred to what was then Digital Commons, which was a big computer space. And slowly, Digital Commons became what is now the labs. We first incorporated some 3D printers that we had there and open in Digital Commons in the main library. And then when that brought a lot of new people, new opportunities, new collaborations, we were given a space that we called the Fab Lab. The Fab Lab stands for Fabrication Space. And it's really a space where we provide additional resources in terms of technology or services like classes and workshops. But at the Fab Lab, we have 3D printers, we have a laser cutter, we have some hand tools. So it's really just a space for people to learn skills, start making things with those skills, and start to begin thinking about how they might then take these things that they've made out into the community. And also while being in this space, always trying to push for collaborations among people. Mm-hmm. We also operate a studio that oversees the show. In the studio, the idea is giving people the opportunity to tell their story to photography, video. We're really lucky to have some really skilled staff in the studio who are videographers, people who have made documentaries, so who are really there as resource to help community members work together or independent through different projects. All of these services are free, so it's a really great opportunity to work with community members, which also include artists, organizers and activists in the community. So it's been great working for the library and being involved in so many different ways in a very local scale, but also in a larger scale, and learn more about DC and how people are, like, what people face every day living here in the city.
I mean, I see so many common threads in the work that you're describing, because both in the sanctuaries and at the lab, someone who's never tried out a process before can go and try it out and then perhaps be empowered to do something with that skill, whether it's to participate in direct action, or I've sat in the studio labs when community members come in and they're just like, I have the anniversary project with 500 teenagers and I want to tell their stories, and they'll just be these ladies there taking notes while the librarians kind of workshop their ideas with them and talk through, like, how to plan a project like that. So it's truly amazing, and so there's this idea of lowering the barrier to access to the tools, like, and kind of leveling the playing field of what we're talking about when we talk about an artist and, like, embracing other forms of creativity. But there's also this sense of what types of tools do you need to go out into the world and make things? And I will say, too, that Sade Makonnen, the current maker in residence, comes from a background of doing performative work. But by being a maker in residence for a year, she commits to doing some workshops in library spaces, but using the Fab Lab technology to produce sculptural work. And that work is, I mean, right now there's these beautiful light sculptures that she laser printed and built at the Fab Lab that are on view in a solo show at the August Wilson Center in Pittsburgh, and we're just trying to figure out how to bring them here, you know? Right. It's going to be a beautiful show. So just like that idea that you can, that whatever level you're at, there's, like, a level of growth that's possible in the library. So, but before I get maybe too far down that road, so we've got these kind of two threads to what we're talking about when we talk about art in the library, and there's the public service aspect, service and action, and drawing upon your knowledge as, I didn't know that you'd worked as an organizer, Victor, and I wonder how many librarians have, you know?
I don't know.
You know, the, and then there's the research aspect, which is why I've invited Don Russell to join onto the show, and then maybe from what Victor was saying, the idea that critical thinking is sort of at the intersection of those two things, you know? That through some of the public engagement, just bringing different disciplines and different forms of knowledge to public service is, like, one of the ways that those two things intersect. So Don, Russell, hi, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Greetings. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you all right. So you're out at George Mason University right now,
yes,
is that correct?
I am.
Well,
I am.
So I first got to know Don as director of the Provisions Library for Art and Social Change, which is an amazing, amazing institution that has undergone some changes itself. Can you kind of explain what that is all about?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In about this time of year, in the year 2000, I met a woman named Gaylord Neely, who had a foundation that she was interested in changing their mission, and that she was somewhat interested in the relationship between art and social change and why there wasn't more institutions that were actively bridging those two areas and exploring that sort of gray area in between art and society, if you will. Now, of course, most societies around the world, art plays a much more integral role in life than it does perhaps in the United States. I think there's, for various reasons, art and social change are sometimes even seen as sort of in conflict. If you're working in activism, you might think of arts as being too elitist. And if you're in the art world, you might think that, you know, art is, you know, just a pure thing and shouldn't be sullied by politics. And while these arguments are pretty widespread in media and in culture, there are nevertheless many artists who don't bother with those types of distinctions, who are able to sort of incorporate content into their work in an aesthetic way. So anyway, Provision started in 2000 as an idea, and by September 1st, 2001, we opened our first space in DuPont Circle. And of course, the events of 9/11 took place 11 days after we opened our space. And many people were saying, I don't think this is the right time to be starting an organization that, you know, it's questioning society and whatever. But, you know, we felt strongly that we had a great idea, a great sort of mission for our organization, and we were just going to carry on doing that work. And so initially the idea was we didn't know what kind of sort of social interface we would create. But finally, we did come upon this idea of a library. Libraries are probably always going to exist, and hopefully. In some
That's me knocking on wood. Yeah,
I'm always knocking on paper.
Yeah.
And that book, learning through books, is an ingrained social process. The mechanisms around publishing are very firmly, they're very powerful. I mean, it costs money to publish a book, so the book's got to be good, has to be accurate, has to be well-designed and attractive and well-edited and well-written or well-illustrated. Where am I?
Well, I was maybe going to zoom out one second and just say that your own background, I mean, one way that I got to know you was that I was researching artist books, and you've had a long involvement with artist books more generally prior to Provisions.
Sure,
And I had actually included a poster of the the book bus from Visual Studies Workshop
goodness.
In an exhibition at the Center for Book Arts in New York in 2009. And when I moved to D.C., you said, oh, I wanted to go see that show. You know, I used to drive the book bus. And you know, there was...
That was my first job.
Yeah, and there was this moment in, you know, the history of art when Lucy Lepard thought that artist books would be for sale at airports and pharmacies. And we were all part of that kind of like that utopian moment seems so amazing.
Yes.
And now art bookstores are boutique lounges where we sip cappuccinos. And so,
right.
So you've been in this conversation for a very long time, but you bring that to the decision to make Provisions into a library. And then the moment when I got to know you, and I don't know how much you want to dig into this history, but when I got to know you, Provisions had embarked on these amazing thematic residencies, you know, bringing right. artists to DC to do research.
Yes. The idea of, Provisions is really based on its 33 topic areas, which we call meridians. And we devised this list in consultation with a lot of people. And that became sort of our collection's policy for the books that we would include. And so they are basically research topics. And if you can go online to see the full list of them at provisionslibrary.org under meridians. But we felt that the real opportunity is for artists to be engaged with society at every level, so that, like, employment for artists, like, you know, city planning, of course, nowadays has artists involved, but artists have also been in residence inside other parts of city government as well. And as well, like here on campus, artists are getting engaged in scientific research just as part of a research team. So I've been on a sort of mission to take artists out of the art world as we sort of know it these days, and into healthcare, into science, into all realms of society. So to test this sort of notion out, we managed to raise sufficient funding to bring, over the course of 3 years, 26 artists to D.C., particularly to do research in the many archives, museums, advocacy organizations, et cetera, that are here in Washington. Because Washington is really a research platform, mm-hmm. and that's the way we really wanted to look at it. And so we did a call for proposals for artists to come to D.C. for a month, we would work very closely with them to put them in contact with people that they're interested in. For instance, one artist was interested in researching the design of spacesuits. And so we got her involved with the Air and Space Museum archives out in near Dulles. And she was able to actually handle the original Apollo astronauts' spacesuits. And then she made a film later on about the first Vietnamese person to be sent into space in the Chinese space program. So the possibilities for art and research are completely unlimited as far as I'm concerned. And the more I've been out here at Mason, the more clear it is to me that art is a key ingredient in sort of any kind of investigational process. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've really been trying to establish here is a some kind of an Provisions is an independent 501c3 nonprofit, but we are kind of embedded in a university, and that was really a conscious strategy rather than to become a large organization ourselves, to take our idea of bridging art and social change and embedding it in larger institutions, and in a sense giving those institutions sort of permission to go along these research lines.
Well, that's sort of an ethos that I really appreciate working with the public library as well, this idea that it can be a hub and a connector to other things in the city. But part of what I'm hearing as I listen to you describe what Provisions does, Don, is, you know, if librarians are professionals at, like, plugging people into networks of resources, and then there is often a different kind of network of resources that you know about when you work
right.
in the arts especially, and you're
right.
by working in a university you're kind of trying to plug one into the other, and I'm thinking a lot about how do we plug it in, you know, how do we take that power of the sort of informal national network and international network of artists and the types of knowledges and the projects they're working on and plug it in to other kinds of networks so that people can keep can keep kind of multiplying the impact of this work. I don't know if anyone else wants to chime in. Like,
well, something, Don, you mentioned that you always try and find ways to get artists to connect to other different disciplines. I mean, in the work of the labs, we're always thinking of ways that we can bring people of every sort of discipline together in one space. And I think that when that happens, like, the potential for possibilities is immense. And like in other spaces and libraries where sometimes you see different sorts of customers coming in and out and staying on their own, I think the labs has really offered the opportunity to kind of break these barriers or divisions between people and come together to seek collaborations, to learn from one another and just think and have fun as well.
Yeah. I look at it like an ecosystem, you know, like you need certain elements for an ecosystem to thrive. And one of the things that's kind of missing in DC, like you say, is this coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all know there's this vast network of people sort of out there, but they're not necessarily connected and working together in some way. And I don't know, like many cities don't have this problem. But somehow in DC, I don't know, there's something that doesn't allow us to sort of have our own power, you know?
Right.
To sort of own our own power.
We've been kind of studying this for a while and we've talked about it a lot. So that's one reason that I looked forward to getting some of us. I mean, anyone else thinking about the challenges of this? I mean, I think a little bit about the labs and the idea that, I mean, the labs is amazing and there's a sort of utopian space you create when people can come together for a minute, but then there's a lot of, I know that the library is thinking about this a lot, you know, how do you tailor the labs to support different types of needs and that it's never going to be a substitute for the type of stable space that like the sanctuaries needs or that there's different hours or storage of materials or things to do things on a certain scale. But I'm not just interested in like, I don't know. You know, I think that both of these things are very, very, very needed. But as well, you know, Don is talking about something that I'm very interested in too, which is just how do we make this network more tangible?
Right. Yeah, no, I'm constantly thinking right now in my current role, how is it that we as the lab support everyone in the community and specifically artists and organizers? I think we having Sade working with us has mm-hmm. been a huge opportunity. It's been a great learning experience to really think about how is it that we actually support artists in a sustainable way that for the library and a public institution. So I'm always dealing with that question. Like I'm always trying to engage with different sort of people to see what their needs might be. But I mean, it's definitely a benefit to the library to have artists in our spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, especially when working with people of every different background, when you throw art at them or when you start talking about the process of an artist, it's so easy for that, for many people to start having like light bulb moments in their mind. And start thinking of very abstract ways in more tangible mm-hmm. ways. I mean, when I was working at Shaw, we were running a coffee and conversation group, and coffee and conversation was mainly made up of homeless customers coming in to talk to each other. But through the Poor People's Campaign, we brought in some artists to talk about their work. And all of a sudden, these homeless customers were able to see themselves in this part of work and see and connect things from their own histories to this larger movement.
Mm-hmm.
That was really kind of motivating to see and beautiful, honestly.
I mean, and so many artists are engaged with, I mean, activist artists and artists are engaged with history and historical thinking. And there is a history of kind of building solidarity and that we sometimes lose sight of. I mean, that's maybe as a coda. I mean, I'm so interested in this idea of embedding artists, as Don is, into multiple disciplines. Mm-hmm. But something I see as a frustration, you know, in New York, they've done a lot of this, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's like, how does what the artist has learned port back out to the public? Right. And then how do we build on it and how do we embed it? And I think we have to stop there, but I want to keep thinking about that and hopefully thinking about it with a library system. Any like thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a real issue. We get a chance this last weekend to go to New York with a couple of leaders from the sanctuaries to a workshop in organizing and art and democracy. And we got to work with the guys from Jet Seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing us all the work that they've been doing for social movements to serving certain communities. And we were wondering, oh, that's amazing. How are you able to mm-hmm. to afford to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying, and I think this is very interesting, they were saying, you know, we decided that we don't want to put the burden, the economical burden, on the communities that they don't have, and not also on us, because we are artists and we need some compensation also for our work. So we decide to go to art institutions, to educational institutions, and said, you know, we are doing this work for this community. And, you know, would you like to fund it?
Mm-hmm.
So put your money where your words are.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of, I think that will trigger a lot of artists plugging into the communities and looking who they might help.
Mm-hmm.
So and if there is this connection between the communities, the artists, and the bigger institutions, so I think it can create a real meaningful change there.
Yeah, I mean, Don's done some great work in that regard, and you know, that was one of my, when I met with artists about the poster project, we were saying, are you going to talk about the history of the Poor People's Campaign, the issues, are we working on direct action on the four pillars of the Poor People's Campaign: racism, poverty, mm-hmm. war, economic destruction? And I was sort of thinking my first level goal is just to let people know that there are people in DC working on these issues, right, in a deep way. And through that, we actually plugged into the Just Seeds poster project, and that the portfolio that we created, that we're part of, we worked to create over 300 posters through the library system, through a series of workshops, and all those posters are going to be shown with the Just Seeds Poor People's Campaign portfolio at Interference Archive in Brooklyn. And that's sort of like using the Art World Network to kind of keep amplifying how these projects can grow. I'm rattling on, and I think we need to wrap up, but thank everybody so much for taking a minute, and I hope we find ways to materialize our network and continue the conversation.
Yeah, and then thank you,
absolutely.
Thanks so much, Don. Thanks for all of your time, Nando and Victor.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Nice talking to you, Don.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you. Yes, look forward to seeing you guys.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
This has been an episode of the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcast live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Letting everyone know, after Thanksgiving, there are a couple great programs coming up related to culture and happening in the library. December 13th, Dr. Maria McWhorter will be in conversation with Dr. David Driscoll about the history of the Barnett Aiden Gallery at Shaw Library, 7 p.m. And on December 16th, Saturday, at the National Building Museum, the 1968/2018 collaborative group of local organizations and individuals observing the 50th anniversary of 1968 in D.C. will be having a year-long sort of reflection event with a talk by photographer Phil Portlock. And that event is happening from 1 to 4 p.m. at the National Building Museum. Visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library. Follow us on Instagram at DC Public Library and Twitter at DCPL. Download the show wherever you listen to your podcast by searching for Full Service Radio. Thank you for listening and have a good afternoon.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.